Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. A warning, this program is not, I repeat it, not an infomercial. This program is more info than commercial. Our goal is to get vital health information out to you, and you can make your own decisions and choices. That's what Intelligent Medicine is all about. And we got lots to talk about this hour, plus your phone calls. We invite you to call us at 888-302-3684. And we've got a couple of callers on the line, but I want to share with you an article that has been getting lots of hits, tons of hits, on Facebook and at drhoffman.com. The 12 supplements you should never take. That was part of our weekly newsletter, and then we posted it on Facebook, and a lot of people have found it interesting and informative. It's about what I consider the dirty dozen supplements. And let me say up front that, you know, I'm not here, like, sometimes you'll see these articles in various conventional publications, and they're talking about, you know, don't take antioxidants, don't take fish oil, don't take vitamin D. And that's not what this is about. This is not a vitamin or supplement bashing article that is coming out of prejudice against supplements or ignorance. This is about supplements that I think are overly hyped or have been proven ineffective that I'd like to warn you about. So go to drhoffman.com or check me out on Facebook. You can like my Facebook page, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And I'll tell you about a couple of them that I have a problem with. But here's among them are vitamin D2. Now, we often talk about vitamin D, but when we talk about vitamin D, let's add the numeral 3 to vitamin D when we recommend it. It should be vitamin D3. Vitamin D comes in two forms, unfortunately. And in conventional medicine, sometimes your doctor will say, oh my goodness, your vitamin D is extremely low. I will prescribe very high dose vitamin D. And that is to the good. There's now recognition that it's important to get vitamin D up in certain conditions. Rheumatologists will sometimes do this, for example, in patients with rheumatoid arthritis, recognizing that vitamin D can help reduce inflammation. So they will zealously reach for the prescription pad and give you a prescription for 50,000 international units of vitamin D. Commonly, these products are vitamin D2 instead of vitamin D3. And that's a problem. When I prescribe very high dose vitamin D, like 50,000 once a week, even sometimes twice a week for certain conditions, I use the vitamin D3 form. Which is, we don't even put it on our website because we don't want people fooling around with such high doses of vitamin D3. I prescribe it in the office, but it's vitamin D3. And fortunately, the vast majority of vitamin D that you get in health food stores is vitamin D3, not vitamin D2. But I noticed that there's a trend for some stores and some websites to offer what they call vegetarian vitamin D, which is often vitamin D2. So let's look at a study that compares vitamin D2 to vitamin D3. And you'll find some more details on this in my article, 12 supplements you should never, never take. One of them is vitamin D2. They did a study where they gave people vitamin D2 or vitamin D3. This was in Germany. They received either 2,000 international units of vitamin D2 or 2,000 international units of vitamin D3. And unfortunately, these people had very low levels of vitamin D. So they both experienced an increase when they got these doses of vitamin D. One group, the ones who got the vitamin D2, their vitamin D increased by 12 points, by 12 units. So say that it had started out at 30, it went to 42. But when you used vitamin D3, it went up 18 points. So that's a 50% greater efficacy with vitamin D3. And interestingly, what they found was that the vitamin D2 suppressed the active metabolite that you measure in the blood, the business end of vitamin D that you want to increase. So the researchers conclude that vitamin D3 supplementation raised the blood levels of vitamin D more effectively than did vitamin D2. And the vitamin D2 supplementation appeared to suppress the body's own production of useful vitamin D3. And the authors conclude that D3 should always be used instead of D2 for supplementation. This is from a study in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinological Metabolism, 2013. So it's important if you're taking vitamin D to make sure that the form is vitamin D3, not vitamin D2. So when it comes to health food store or website vitamin D, frequently they're offering what's called vegetarian vitamin D. And you have to be careful that that is not ergocalciferol, which is vitamin D2, as opposed to cholecalciferol, which is vitamin D3. The vegetarian vitamin D2 comes from mushrooms that have been irradiated with ultraviolet radiation. Now, that sounds weird. Why would you irradiate mushrooms? Well, mushrooms, like people, make vitamin D when they're exposed to sunlight. And they actually get a tan. The mushrooms turn brown when they're irradiated. But they also have a higher content of vitamin D2, which is then extracted from the mushrooms, and they put it in the supplements. But that's an inferior form of vitamin D. The vitamin D3, the valuable D3 that we recommend, actually comes to us from lanolin, which is the wool of sheep. So you could say that that is, it's not vegetarian, but it certainly is a cruelty-free product, because when sheep get shorn, they actually like it. Usually they shear them when the weather gets warm in the spring. And so it's kind of like getting, shedding your winter fur coat so that you feel less hot in the warmer summer months. And so the lanolin, which is sort of a rich, oily, water-protective, moisture-proofing substance that coats wool, is used for cosmetics, but it's also rich in vitamin D, and the vitamin D then finds its way into your supplements, and that is to your benefit. So among the supplements that I consider among the 12 you should never take in that article, vitamin D2, avoid it. And there's several others. We'll talk about those in a subsequent broadcast. All right, check out the article, 12 Supplements You Should Never Take, at drhoffman.com. And when we return, we're going to take some of your phone calls. Our number, 888-302-3684. Feel free to call. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine, 888-302-3684, should you be desirous of posing a question. And Tom's calling us from Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Yeah. Hello, doctor. I have a friend. He's 76. He's in kidney decline.
Uh-huh.
His GFR is 35.
Yeah, that's a little low.
Mm-hmm. Protein in the urine, 220.
That's a little high.
And he has renal stenosis. My question, would he be a candidate for chelation therapy to remove plaque in the arteries? He was told the substances in the chelation therapy would make his kidney condition worse.
Yeah, this is an interesting question, because when it comes to chelation therapy, let's first discuss what chelation is. Chelation is a therapy that was invented in the 1930s, actually, for removal of lead from the bloodstream. in industrial workers. And then it was found as it was being used because of the prevalence of lead in the battery industry, the radiator repair, in paint industry, that a lot of industrial workers who got chelation therapy also had an improvement in their cardiovascular status. Their blood pressure came down, and they did better in terms of circulatory diseases. And then it was recognized that it might actually help to lower the risk of heart attacks. And in a recent big study, it was a over $30 million study, which was commissioned by the National Institutes of Health, it was found that heart attack sufferers who took 40 chelations had a lower risk of subsequent heart attacks. And in particular, if they were diabetic, they had a dramatic reduction, more than 30% reduction. So chelation therapy is a tool we've been using in the field of complementary medicine for many decades. I personally have been doing it for nearly 30 years on patients. And now we've had this vindicated by a large NIH study. So there are some potential hazards or downsides to chelation, and we monitor patients very carefully for kidney function using primarily what you stated, the GFR, the glomerular flow rate, which is based on BUN and creatinine in particular, the patient's size and age and health status, and we determine if chelation can be given safely. Now, the question, does chelation worsen kidney function? Well, yes, if you massively overdose a patient with IV EDTA, which is the active ingredient, you can actually damage the kidneys. You can actually put a patient into kidney failure if you administer the IV too quickly or in too high an amount, particularly if the patient is older and has compromised kidney function. And in patients who are on dialysis, forget about it. It's out of the question. Or patients who are, you know, hanging by a thread with very poor kidney function with maybe a creatinine of, you know, 4, 5, 6, you really don't want to do chelation because that could be just push them right over the edge into kidney failure. However, a study was actually done on precisely the kind of patient that you described your friend is. Patients with intermediate impending renal failure or renal compromise, not really kidney failure, but it's compromised kidneys. Many people have lower filtration ability as they age or if they're suffering from chronic diabetes or hypertension. So it's important to know, is chelation safe for those patients? So what they did is they adjusted the chelation in a way that was safe for those patients, giving them lower doses very carefully and slowly and monitoring their kidney function. And this study was done actually about 15, 20 years ago. And what they found was that not only did it not harm their kidneys, it actually improved their kidney functions. And we have reason to suspect that getting excess lead and cadmium out of the kidneys, because these are substances that are toxic for the tissue, in particular for the delicate cells in the kidneys, that getting these substances out can actually help the kidneys recover function. So ultimately, if it's done correctly and carefully, it can be okay. I mean, there's some patients who I refuse to do chelation on. I'd say, look, you're coming at the very last, at the last moment here, you know, the clock is going to strike midnight pretty soon. It's, you know, with you, it's 11:59. So, you know, it's too late to avert dialysis. But there are other patients who I see who are beginning to show compromise in kidney function, and I can safely chelate them using the appropriate methods. I think it's important to see a practitioner who is aware of these potential hazards and is properly certified in chelation and understands the risks and tests patients frequently to make sure that their kidney function isn't going south while they're receiving this helpful therapy. So I thank you for your good call. I think it brings up an interesting issue. If you want to learn more about chelation, once again, drhoffman.com. I recently wrote an article in a scientific journal. It's called, just look at chelation. Look for an article on chelation at drhoffman.com. Pretty extensive description of the recent NIH study called the TACT study that was done on chelation. All right. This item, it comes to us from the University of Florida, Florida State. One of the same guys who are in there. They're in the Final Four, right? They also do very good medical research, and it's a study on watermelon, which I guess you can understand. You know, it's a southern state. They grow a lot of watermelon. States like northern Florida, Georgia are watermelon states, And so they commissioned a study on the effects of watermelon consumption on blood pressure. And what they found was quite interesting. Watermelon can significantly reduce blood pressure in overweight individuals, both at rest and while under stress. So I finally figured out what's up with that, because what's in watermelon that could be beneficial? Well, watermelon is red, and it turns out it has a lot of lycopene. Lycopene is also present in tomatoes, protects the prostate, has anti-cancer effects. But does lycopene really reduce blood pressure that much? Not really. So what is it about watermelon that can offer blood pressure reducing effects? And it turns out that watermelon is rich in an amino acid called L-citrulline. Now, not many people have heard of that. L-citrulline is kind of an obscure amino acid. A lot more people have heard of arginine, and arginine is thought to lower blood pressure because it promotes nitric oxide. A lot of the products out there that say that they boost nitric oxide, they enhance male potency, they have arginine in them. But it turns out that citrulline, which watermelon is particularly rich in, is an even better inducer of nitric oxide, which helps to expand the blood vessels, lowering blood pressure, maybe enhancing circulation to that certain part of the body where you want circulation to be enhanced. I'm not talking about your heart. I'm talking about the organ responsible for sexual performance. L-citrulline seems to make a difference, and there have actually been some studies using L-citrulline for erectile dysfunction. So American Journal of Hypertension this month has an article from Florida State University suggesting that L-citrulline, that's the key ingredient, can help us lower blood pressure. And I'm a little concerned about, you know, until people consume lots and lots of watermelon, it's pretty sugary. I'm thinking, why don't we just use the L-citrulline? Maybe 1 gram, 1,000 milligrams, 2 or 3 times daily. That's the amount that the study showed could help with lowering blood pressure. So check it out. L-citrulline, I think, is a supplement that is about to make a bit of a splash for its abilities to enhance nitric oxide, perhaps in helping sexual performance, but also helping to control borderline blood pressure. L-citrulline. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and for a couple of weeks we've been talking about Core Restore, which is our detox-in-a-box product. It's a full system for enabling you to reset your body with, in this case, a spring detox. It's something that helps you to eat a light diet along with the right kind of supplementation and a protein powder that covers your basic nutritional needs while you experience a detoxification from some of the foods that you crave and overindulge in. And it's really flying off the shelves at drhoffman.com at our store. So the idea behind it is that a lot of people have inflammation, or they have food addiction, or they have ups and downs of blood sugar that continue to make them feel lousy. And what's called intermittent fasting, IF, is very helpful for creating a reset in your body. It reduces inflammation, In experimental animals, intermittent fasting has been shown to prolong life, reduce blood pressure, reduce the risk of diabetes. And so it's a great idea to jumpstart your spring detox. Check it out, drhoffman.com. It's Core Restore. And this week we had yet another heartbreaking episode out of all places, Fort Hood, a place that should be maximum security after that horrible incident that occurred a couple of years back. And the new think that comes out of these episodes, I mean, there's so many episodes of people going bonkers, is that the very psychiatric drugs that we use to control the violent impulses of people who have post-traumatic stress disorder, or they're just a little screwy, that these drugs may disinhibit them and cause them to be more likely to become stone-cold killers, either killing others or killing themselves. I mean, it takes a lot to get past the restraint that people have that prevents them from inflicting bodily harm on others. Soldiers, unfortunately, are conditioned to get used to the idea of shooting people. But when it comes to shooting or killing yourself, that's a pretty drastic act. And unfortunately, there's more and more evidence that the use of sleeping pills, the use of psychotropic drugs, is associated with accidents and aggressive outbursts and even homicide and suicide. So the issue is not so much, are these people undertreated? The issue is, you know, perhaps they're overtreated. I'm concerned about the effects of some of these antidepressant drugs. And this is a little bit of a segue to a discussion about what really drives depression. And it turns out that one of the things that may have a big impact on depression is inflammation. Inflammation is highly associated with depression. Here's how it works. Think of the last time that you even had a head cold or sinusitis or the flu. What was your mental outlook like? It probably wasn't good. If I'm an example of how things go south when you're slightly sick, I am just a bear when it comes to my mood. If I have a little perturbation like a head cold or the flu, my mood plummets. Suddenly, I see life through dark-colored glasses. My impressions of reality are distorted. I start thinking a lot of negative thoughts. I try to button myself up with optimism and the perspective that it'll be over soon and it's only going to be a few days. But when you are sick with an infection, a viral infection, like a cold or flu, your body releases inflammatory cytokines. They flood the body. And of course, the brain is part of the body, and the brain is dramatically affected by cytokines. It causes us to feel lethargic and tired and depressed. And so there's some very interesting research that suggests that natural anti-inflammatories can help with mood. Some research, we actually did an entire podcast a few months back with a researcher. I believe he was at he was in Texas at Major Cancer Hospital down there, who's doing research on curcumin for cancer prevention, discovered that curcumin was beneficial for depression. He did a small trial with individuals suffering from depression, double-blind placebo-controlled trial, and found that potent extracts of curcumin helped to dramatically alleviate depression, even more so than the drug Prozac. The curcumin went toe-to-toe versus one of America's most popular antidepressant drugs, Prozac, and it turned out that just a couple of capsules of potent curcumin per day were as effective as Prozac. And so this new study, this is from March 28th, eating cruciferous vegetables may lower inflammation. In a study of more than 1,000 Chinese women those who ate the most cruciferous vegetables had substantially less inflammation than those who ate the fewest. Cruciferous vegetables, of course, include cabbage, broccoli, bok choy, Brussels sprouts, kale, and cauliflower. And so there's definitely evidence that these vegetables protect against cancer. What's up with that? Well, cancer is sometimes the culmination of a chronic inflammatory process. Chronic inflammation irritates the cells. The cells then go haywire, mutate, and proliferate into cancer. So what they found was that women in the top fifth of consumption of cruciferous vegetables took in just not that much, 1.5 cups of cruciferous vegetables every day. And then they measured the levels of inflammatory cytokines, tumor necrosis factor alpha, interleukin-1 beta, interleukin-6. And they found that the level of these three important inflammatory molecules was lowest among women with the highest intakes of cruciferous vegetables. They didn't check them in terms of mood, but certainly we can make the argument that eat your vegetables, especially your cruciferous vegetables, take your curcumin, take your fish oil, certainly fish oil has anti-inflammatory effects, and reduce pro-inflammatory foods like sugar and chemicalized junk. And this could be a dramatic way of curtailing our dependence on antidepressant medications, medications that sometimes stop the pain, stop the suffering, but may have unforeseen side effects in terms of impulsive violence towards others or towards oneself. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Heart disease is the number one killer in America, but you don't need to become a statistic. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'd like to share with you that one of the best ways that I found to support heart health is by taking Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Backed by more than 700 peer-reviewed studies, Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Kyolic aged garlic extract has also been shown to support healthy cholesterol levels and proper circulation. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic aged garlic extract is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic aged garlic extract is completely odorless and won't upset your stomach. Made from 100% organically grown garlic, I recommend taking Kyolic daily as part of a heart-healthy lifestyle. Kyolic aged garlic extract is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores nationwide.
Did you know that two of the top five most prescribed drugs in this country are for digestive disorders? It's a fact. Hi, I'm Susie Cohen, author of The 24-Hour Pharmacist. One of the questions I'm most frequently asked is how to relieve and eliminate digestive discomfort. Many people don't realize that indigestion, heartburn, bloating, or gas are often caused by a bacterial imbalance in the GI tract. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics exclusive formula delivers a live, viable blend of beneficial bacteria directly to the source of your discomfort, relieving uncomfortable symptoms. I recommend Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics for healthy digestion and overall good health because it's backed by 25 years of research. This exclusive formula improves digestive pH and helps you regain bacterial balance by correcting the root cause of digestive issues. I encourage you to discover the Dr. O'Hara difference for yourself.
Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Huey Lewis in the news. And the news this week on Intelligent Medicine, our podcasts have been through the roof. We did a great podcast early in the week with one of the foremost integrative gynecologists in America, Dr. Alan Marshawski. Fascinating look at natural treatment of fibroids and endometriosis and menopause and PMS with that outstanding expert. Just check out drhoffman.com. Check out the podcasts. They're archived there. And we also did something a little bit different. We talked to the author of a book called HA, H-A, exclamation point. And it's an in-depth study of laughter and humor. And there's some medical and health ramifications. So check out our podcasts at drhoffman.com. Also, a weekly Q&A with Layla, where you can weigh in with your questions. Just email us your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll endeavor to answer them for you on our podcasts. All right, this item comes to us from the American College of Cardiology. You know, they did a bunch of studies on what does matter when it comes to cardiovascular disease. And there's some surprises. Being single does matter. Drinking diet soda matters. Excess exercise, not lack of exercise, but, well, of course, lack of exercise causes cardiovascular disease, but overdoing it can cause cardiovascular disease. But here's one that I find kind of questionable. Hemoglobin A1C, that's an important test. Hemoglobin A1C measures your blood sugar over time. And they found that hemoglobin A1C that was in the normal limits, not diabetic, because no question, diabetes increases your risk of cardiovascular disease. But if it's a 5, 7, 8, 9, you know, on the borderline, they said it doesn't matter. So what does that lead us to believe, that hemoglobin A1C isn't important anymore? Well, I'm referring to an article by my good colleague, Dr. David Perlmutter. He wrote a great book recently called Grain Brain, and we did some great podcasts together. And we're in agreement that you really have to minutely follow and control your hemoglobin A1C to have optimal health, because once it's above about 5.5, 5.6, that's it. That's in the normal range, but high in the normal range, it increases your risk for all manner of problems. And now, while the American College of Cardiology is minimizing risk, the British Journal of Cancer has published an incredibly important report that found a strong relationship between this blood test and the risks for various forms of cancer. So what they found was that even slight elevations in hemoglobin A1C, say your level is, you know, 5.9, 6.0, and your doctor says, don't worry, you're not diabetic, it can increase your risk for cancer. And moreover, a study which is written up in Grain Brain, and it's very thoroughly discussed by Dr. Perlmutter, suggests that even if your hemoglobin A1C is between 5.6 and 5.8, which is considered normal, when you look at a study, these levels already put you in the second highest category for brain shrinkage. So Dr. Perlmutter's controversial recommendation, and I tend to agree with him, is that we should strive to keep our hemoglobin A1C at less than 5.5, even 5.2. would be desirable. And the simplest way to accomplish this is by reducing your consumption of carbohydrates and sugar. And certainly exercise plays a role in blood sugar control, such nutrients as magnesium and fish oil and chromium and berberine. These are nutrients that make a difference. We use a product, a berberine product called CM Core. CM stands for cardiometabolic. And certainly there are cardiometabolic benefits to controlling your average blood sugar or your hemoglobin A1C. So many issues, inflammation, high blood sugar, may play a role in Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, asthma, multiple sclerosis, inflammatory disorders like arthritis. So optimize your hemoglobin A1C. Consider alpha-lipoic acid and a form of thiamine called benfotiamine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.
drhoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Heartbreaking news last week that the rate of autism is soaring. Now, 1 in 86... and among infant boys, It's 1 in 63. What in the world is happening? Some claim, oh, we have better surveillance for autism. We're recognizing it earlier, but something is going on. And one of the more promising avenues for treating and reversing autism is through the use of folic acid. There's definitely signs that folic acid may have a role in autism prevention. In the past, we've had neural tube defects, heartbreaking disabilities that occur because of folic acid deficiency. And just simply fortifying our food with folic acid has resulted in a dramatic curtailment of neural tube defects. But a recent study shows that among children of mothers who used folic acid supplements, incidence of autism was reduced by 40%. Now, the bad news is that the Food and Drug Administration is attempting to take one of the most important sources of folic acid off the market. That is methylfolate. And methylfolate is now under patent by Merck. Merck, follow the money trail, please, here, because Merck apparently is influencing the FDA to quash the competition because they feel that their patent for methylfolate may be threatened by its sale over the counter. They want it just to be available by prescription. It's estimated that 30 to 40% of the population can't efficiently convert synthetic folic acid into active folate in the body. They have MTHFR defects. And therefore, check out ANH-USA.com. ANH-USA.org, because they'll give you the 411 on this very important effort to push back against a further restriction on your right to access natural folate, an important supplement that prevents autism, that may have an impact on depression, that is key for prevention of dementia and Alzheimer's. It's your right to have access to this, and ANH-USA.org is fighting on your behalf. I'm a member of their board, and I recommend that you join them. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Have yourself a great week. This is Intelligent Medicine.